Tako, nadaljevali bomo s predavanjem doktorja Jiržija Jendroške, in sicer sodelovanje javnosti v skladu z Aarhuško konvencijo. Gospod Jendroška je pravni družbenik in izredni profesor iz univerze in odbora za izpolnjevanje Aarhuške konvencije. Prosim.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you for inviting me. I must admit, I just came from Geneva, and when I told my colleagues in the convention, Aarhus Convention, about this event, they were very glad to hear that it gets such a prominence with the highest authorities of the Republic of Slovenia being interested in the issue. We in the convention, we are always happy to hear of such events, and also that the judicial world and ombudsmen all over the Europe are gradually more and more involved in environmental rights. What I'm going to say today is first a bit about the Aarhus Convention. It was already addressed on several accounts, so I don't think I need to make any larger introduction. Nevertheless, I think a couple of issues are worthwhile to be addressed, and also about the monitoring compliance mechanism, especially the compliance committee that I'm a member of. And then about the public participation pillar, I was asked to specifically address this pillar. So I will tell a little bit about the legal nature of the obligations and about the activities and decisions covered, then about some general rules, and finally about the specific procedures in the light of the opinions or findings of the Compliance Committee. The convention, the structure of the convention includes the objective, and the objective is right to the environment. It was already mentioned by the President about such a right, and as I understood, in Slovenia, a right to healthy environment is granted in the Constitution itself. This is, I'm afraid, not the case at the international level. At the international level, right to healthy environment is not a right that is granted. Aarhus Convention is, in fact, the only international instrument that mentions such a right to exist. It is not, however, in a binding language. Aarhus in Article 1 mentions that in order to implement such a right, the public should have rights to information, to participate, and to access to courts. So that's the objective. And then we have definitions and general provisions that provide the background for the three pillars. And the three pillars is access to information, public participation, and access to courts. So what are the three pillars? It's so-called passive disclosure. That is a disclosure upon request to all the information that the administration is holding, or it is holding for the administration. And then active disclosure is about the active obligations on part of the administration to disseminate some kind of information actively to the public. Part of this is, it's very important part, is that the public administration is under obligation to possess and to maintain in a clear, for the public, clear way, the administration, which is the information that is relevant to its functions. One of the most often problems is that public administration do not have information which they should have, or they do have this information, but it is stored in such a way that it's not easily recognizable for the public. And that is against the convention. But I'm not going to talk much more about access to information pillar. Then there is a public participation pillar, which is divided into a couple of different legal regimes. I'm sorry, my speech will be a boring legal speech after some passionate speeches in the first part. This one is very technical legal, so I apologize for this. So we have in the second pillar four different legal regimes. First is about decision for specific activities, that's Article 6 regime. Then plans and programs regime, which is Article 7. And these two are framed in a binding legal obligations. And then we have public participation in the preparation of policies and in the normative acts. And these two, Article 7 and 8, these two are not included into the binding obligations. Therefore, in many countries, they are just purely neglected. In fact, they are not even addressed in any of the binding legislation of the European Union. And then we have an amendment, which is not yet in force, that we adopted for public participation in decisions relating to genetically modified organisms. And I'm not going to talk about this because it is not yet in force. And then finally we have the third pillar, access to justice, which is divided accordingly into three different legal regimes. First is access to justice in case of abusing right to information. This is Article 9.1. And then it's access to justice in case of abuse of rights to participate, 9.2. And then third, one of the most controversial ones, it's the separate right to file a public interest lawsuit. One could say that this is somehow a guarantee for the right to the environment. So this Article 9.3 right guarantees the public possibility to challenge at court any illegal actions of its own administration or private persons, polluters, which contravene the provisions of their domestic law. And by the way, in our findings, we consider that contravening the provisions of the European law is considered to be contravening the provisions of the domestic legal system. So we put it on the same footing. Now about a word about the compliance mechanism. The most important element is the compliance committee, and there is a special procedure that was already mentioned as well, that every person can file or initiate the procedure. So what is the compliance committee? Formally speaking, we are not a court of law. We are a committee that is consistent of 9 independent members. There are some requirements that should be lawyers, that should have a well-established track record in environmental law and human rights. We are elected to serve in personal capacity, so we are not representing government, we are just representing ourselves. We are fully independent. There is some regional balance in constituting this in order to be able to handle different cases, because we cover so different legal regimes from Central Asia, like Kazakhstan till Portugal, and to Albania till Finland. So we need to have different expertise, so there is a regional balance. And we are nominated by MOP. By the way, Sandor Fulop was modest enough not to mention that he has a long track record as a member of the Compliance Committee as well. So my fellow before he he was appointed at his important governmental functions, and in fact, taking any function in government precludes members from performing the functions as compliance committee members. We must be absolutely independent in whatever we do. We have had some former ombudsmen and persons having some functions, official functions, but for the time being in the compliance committee, serving in the compliance committee, we can only perform a function like a law professor or independent lawyer, barrister or solicitor, but no any governmental functions is allowed. The compliance procedure, as it was already mentioned, can be triggered by different triggers. The most important one is a possibility for members of the public to inform the committee and initiate a procedure against the failure of a government, any government that is a party to the convention, for not fulfilling its obligation under the convention. And this could relate to specific instance of non-compliance, that is, refusing illegally information or not providing public participation in granting a license in a concrete development project, but also it could relate to a general failure of a government to provide a legal structure or practical framework to implement the provisions of the convention. And more we have this, the second type of cases. The public can initiate the procedure. It's free of charge, obviously. There is basically a requirement, but it is not a strict requirement, to fulfill domestic legal remedies. However, in many instances, we do not consider this as very important, especially if we have cases from countries like Turkmenistan or Belarus. Originally, the compliance committee and the compliance mechanism was meant, or it was expected, to cover mostly cases from countries like, not from the EU countries. But nowadays, it turned out that we have more and more cases and more sophisticated cases against members of European Union, including European Union itself. It was already mentioned, indeed, we have had three cases, and now it's the third one is pending. It's a very complicated case against European Community for not providing adequate access to justice, basically under 9.2 and 9.3. Access to justice in case of access to information is not questioned. It's perfectly well guaranteed under the European Union law, but problematic under the case is 9.2 and 9.3, whereby the communicant is claiming not so much the treaty provisions or secondary law provisions, but first of all, the line of judgments of the European Court of Justice in this, and specifically applying so-called Plowman test. I'm not going to get into details. It's a very complicated case. But as I understood, I was not asked to talk about access to justice here, but about public participation. So I will turn in a moment to public participation issues. But before that, a few words about the procedure and findings in the compliance committee. So, as I said, in practice, it works like a court hearing. We have both sides represented with the lawyers. Currently, we have sophisticated cases on access to justice for, I don't know, UK, for example, that the government is represented by a number of lawyers and the communicant is also represented by a number of lawyers. They are very sophisticated legal cases with the documentation which is that big, a couple of several hundreds of pages of documentation for the case. Our findings, it's formally and not binding. It's not like a court verdict that is directly binding, but it is adopted by the meeting of the parties, and by virtue of the meeting of the parties, it is binding upon the parties. And we can issue recommendations to the parties that are found to be not in compliance, and the parties, and there are some time frames for the parties to take steps to improve the situation. It is not so much in relation to concrete instances of non-compliance. We are not a redress committee. We cannot order dismantling of a factory that was built and approved without public participation. But we can ask the party to change the legal system in order to prevent this to happen again in any other future project. And also we can have a range of other more direct, let's call it sanctions. At the meeting of the parties on our suggestion adopted a caution on the government of Ukraine for not fulfilling actually recommendations of the committee. Okay, now I'm turning to the public participation pillar, and it covers different situations. First of all, it covers decisions on individual activities or projects, as they are called under the European legislation, which may have a significant effect on the environment. Then we have GMO decisions, which, as I said, it's not yet enforced, this amendment to the convention. Then plans and programs relating to environment, and I will come back to this issue in a moment because it is widely misconcepted, the idea of what is plans and programs relating to the environment. And then policies and normative acts, and I'm not going to spend any time on this because this is not binding, and we as a compliance committee are confronted with only binding obligations, usually. As I said, for Article 6 permits, that's a binding obligation. It's phrased in the word shall. The same is for GMO decisions. For plans and programs, also, these are binding obligations. One of the most important issues is to understand that the convention does not apply across the board. It does not apply to everything, to any decision-making which is related to the environment. In particular, when it comes to specific decisions, not all specific decisions are covered by the requirement of providing public participation. The list of activities, the Article 6, provide, first of all, the list of activities that are subject to public participation requirement. They are based on Annex 1 to EIA directive and IPPC directive, a list of installations. So this is combined list of the activities that at the time of drafting the convention were deemed to be those activities that always require public participation because they always have significant effect on the environment. However, in Annex 1, it is a clause that opens the door for any other activity because it says whenever in a domestic legislation there is an EIA procedure, environmental impact assessment procedure, and this activity is subject to EIA, it's not covered by any of the categories listed specifically in the convention. But in the domestic law, the domestic legislator found it having potential significant impact on the environment and therefore is subject to environmental impact assessment with public participation. This public participation must follow the requirements of Article 6 of the convention. And then we have Article 6.1b, which says on top of this, there is any other activity that might have significant effect on the environment, and the parties should make a determination whether indeed it does have significant effect on the environment, and therefore it should be subject to public participation. This was meant to cover first of all activities from Annex II projects from the directive. However, now we have a case against the European Community in which activities such as Council regulation on setting caught fishing quotas. As you know, under the fisheries policies, this is the exclusive competence of the European Union, and European Union is setting quotas that the fishermen in member states can every year caught. So this is in front of us a case where NGOs arguing that this is a kind of activity that should be subject to public participation under Article 6.1b. The case is not yet finalized, but it opens new perspectives because the list in Annex 1, it's a very traditional 20th century list of activities, whereas this type of an activity that is argued by NGOs should be subject to public participation. It's a different type of regulatory control. But it's still open question. Any changes and extensions to these projects should also be subject to public participation requirement. So what are the decisions that are covered? First of all, in most countries, there is a chain of decision-making, and we address this issue in the case against the European Community, whereby in the European Community law, the European Community decided that public participation should be granted at the very beginning of the decision-making process, that is the EIA stage, where there is the location of the project decided, the very nature of the project is decided. And then it should also be granted at the stage of granting a mission permit, that is, integrated permit under the IPPC directive. So, in the European Union law, it was decided at least twice you need to have public participation and in any extension to these projects. But then, in many countries, the decision-making process covers more levels of decision-making than just two. Usually you have first a planning permission, then you have a construction permit, then you have a polluting permit, and so on and so forth. Sometimes you may have like five consecutive decision-making. So one of the questions that we were confronted with was whether the convention requires public participation to be granted in each and every of these decisions. That's what the NGOs obviously would like to have. And then we come to the so-called significance test. As you could see it in case EU case, we come up with some interpretation. By the way, there is a case law of the compliance committee. It's regularly published. This is the edition that ends with 2008, but you can download it from the convention site, the newest version. I think it might be useful for everyone who is involved on a daily basis, for lawyers, this kind of a compilation. So the significance test is providing a benchmark. Where are the situations where public participation should be granted? So in any of the decisions that significantly changes the parameters of the project or permits any parameters of the project, public participation should be granted. Another type of problems that we are confronted with, also it was already mentioned, what types of decisions are subject to requirement? And then again, it was a case against EU, actually European Investment Bank, for a financing decision. And we found out that a decision was to finance a project. It's not a regulatory decision. It's not a decision whether to permit the project. Therefore, before making a decision by European Commission or European Investment Bank or any other institution of that kind, including the government, the very decision whether to finance a project is not a decision subject to Article 6. Therefore, it does not require public participation to be involved. Also, another problem was an array of agreements that are being taken before taking the decision by public authorities. in case of, there was France and then recently Spanish case, there was an agreement taken by municipal authorities with a developer promising him certain outcome of a decision making. And the communicant was claiming that actually foreclosed any options. Therefore, was not in compliance with the convention. We, however, found out that these decisions are not regulatory decisions, that they are not subject to public participation. We made, however, a recommendation saying that the public authorities should not follow this kind of an approach that behind the closed doors they are taking, in fact, the decision without public participation so that the formal decision is not anymore a decision because the public authorities do not have really discretion. But that's a different story. As I said, in the EU law, we have the requirement to have public participation, first at the EIA stage, and then if we look at the line of judgments of European Court of Justice, especially in the White City and Crystal Palace verdicts, they require that, it, in fact, assessment should be taken twice. First, when the basic parameters are set, and the second, if there is an implementing decision that changes these parameters or addresses impacts that were not addressed before, it should be second assessment, ergo should be also another public participation. And then we have IPPC permit, so that it amounts to at least two or three public participation requirements. And then finally, in the Habitat Assessment Directive, it's not very clear, the directive itself, whether any permitting process involving impact on Natura 2000, whether it public participation is mandatory. However, the way that is interpreted the convention, which says any time when you have an assessment, then we take it that well, actually, we have not yet had any judgment on this. Sorry, I must make a disclaimer. This is my personal opinion. Sorry, this. Okay, then scope of strategic decisions subject to the convention. Plans and programs. The biggest difference here is that we are talking about plans and programs relating to the environment, which is a different way of describing this than plans and programs that may significantly affect the environment. This is much broader. So it covers not only those who are significantly relating to the environment, but any relation to the environment makes them subject to public participation requirement, plans and programs. In many countries, for years, the Article 7 requirement was considered that any plan and program that is subject to so-called SEA, Strategic Environmental Assessment, it is enough to provide for plans and programs that are subject to SEA, public participation. This is not the case. Strategic environmental assessment is required for less plans and programs that under the convention would be required. So, for example, if an administration is making a program of environmental education, it would not be subject to public strategic assessment, but it's relating to environment and needs to be subject to public participation. The same if there is an issue about the compensation for environmental damage or any plan or program that is not subject to SEA, but if, even if it's for small areas, if it's related to the environment, it should be subject to public participation. This is a huge difference which is not always appreciated also at the EU level. Okay, now I'm going to turn to some general rules. First of all, the convention requires reasonable time frames to be set for different phases of the public participation procedure. It does not say what it's reasonable. We have addressed this issue, but first of all, what it means different phases. This is the phase of notification of the public. That's the first step in the procedure. Second is the possibility for the public to inspect the relevant documentation. Thirdly, the public must have enough time to submit comments, to discuss, to submit comments. And finally, the public authority must have enough time to consider the comments. We have had a case of Ukraine where the decision was taken the next day after the commenting period ended. And we found out that it means that, in fact, public authorities didn't have enough time to consider seriously the comments because they took the decision so closely to commenting period. And this is not seriously taking into account comments. Therefore, we found such a provision as not in line with the convention. In some countries, these time limits are fixed, in some are diversified, and we address this issue. Generally, we said the time frames should be flexible enough and take into account the nature of the project and the volume of the documentation that should be inspected so that the public could prepare itself. So first of all, when setting the time frames, it needs to be taken into account, first of all, where and when the documentation is being available, how big is the documentation, whether the public have enough time to prepare itself if this is a documentation for environmental impact assessment of a big project, like recently we had a nuclear power plant. So that's EIA documentation is several hundred of pages. So the public, in order to inspect this, to digest it, to prepare its comments, must have much more time than for a small local project. We found in terms in Lithuanian case that the time frame of only 10 working days for a landfill, it's not reasonable. On the other hand, we found in French case that 6 weeks for the public to inspect the documents and then 45 days for the public to submit comments. This sounds a reasonable time frames for the public to participate and to prepare itself and to participate effectively. Another issue was when the time frame starts. And in Spanish case, when the public authority advertised possibility to inspect documentation on 20th of December. And the commenting period ended on 11th of January. And we found that this is exactly during the Christmas time where the public would not be able to really prepare itself. So it is not only the length of the time frames, but it's also a starting date, which is important. Also, we found quite recently in another case that setting a maximum amount of time rather than minimum is not in line with the convention. So if a legislation says the precise timing would be set by public authorities, but it cannot be longer than 1 month. That we found not in compliance with the committee. We found in compliance, in the same case, that it's good if it says the public hearing cannot be held sooner than 1 month after the public is notified. So at least 1 month for the public to prepare. It could be longer. Another general rule is that the public participation should be early in the decision-making. And then the question is, does it relate to the sequence of decision-making, when the public participation should be granted, or it relates to each decision-making? And that was the question of scoping that was Sandor mentioned in Hungarian case also. And then in the EC case, we had the question whether public participation after construction of the activity is possible. And our answer was, yes, IPPC permit is granted after the construction is finished. The communicant was saying, so then there is no options anymore. The answer was, from the European Commission, the options as to the location of the project were considered at the EIA procedure. And then at the stage of IPPC permit, we are not coming back to the location. We are just discussing the technology. So our basic judgment was that the convention is in line if we see public participation in the concept of tiered decision making. You can see, I think. Whereby at each stage of decision making, certain options are discussed and selected with the participation of the public. And at each consecutive stage, only the issues within the already selected options are considered. So, if we have, and that was in Lithuanian case, a decision whether to build a landfill or waste incineration, under Lithuanian law, the proper stage to discuss it was at the waste management plan. And if the public had a possibility to discuss there, then it cannot come back to the issue whether we should build landfill or waste incineration at the stage of EIA decision. Then the only one legitimate option to be discussed is which should be the alternative location for, at that case, it was chosen landfill. And then once it was decided with the public participation, the next stage would be IPPC permit, at which stage it's not any more discussion whether it should be incineration or not, because it was decided, whether it should be this place or another place, because it was already decided, but now only the technology, because that's the right place for discussing. So that's the line of thoughts, and the public does not always appreciate this, and sometimes they would like to have all options all the time open, which is not possible in a rational decision making. Okay, I understand that I have like 5 minutes. Very shortly about the basic requirements for basic elements of the procedure. It's notification, access to information, possibility to submit comments, due account taken, and information about the decision taken. The public concerned, according to Article 6.2, shall be informed in an adequate and effective manner. The problem with this provision is that the directive, neither EIA nor IPPC directive, as amended by public participation directive, did not introduce this particular wording into the EU law. And that means most of EU countries did not put this into legislation. And that was subject of a complaint. We found that the European Community was not under obligation to word after word implement the convention, bearing in mind the characteristic legal feature of the directive. But the Commission rightly was saying, but the fact that the directive does not introduce this wording does not release member states from applying the convention here. And most member states don't do it. And this is very, very important issue. I'm not able to do everything to cover all the, as you see, no clear requirement about this adequately and timely and effective manner. Why it is so important? The case we had in Lithuania, there was no requirement about notice being effective. And the Lithuanian law and the directive requires that the public should be informed by a notice in local press. And the Lithuanian authorities had to make a choice. They had one local magazine that was a magazine for official information, public tenders. It was issued in 400 copies once a week. And then the second local press that they had the choice where to advertise was a daily newspaper, 1,500 copies each day, with sport and all the popular issues. So what do you think they made an announcement were? In the first one. And the communicant was saying it was okay with the directive, it was okay with the Lithuanian law because it was a local press, but it was not effective. Because who reads this? Only those who have any business with the local administration and not the local population. And then the second issue was the Lithuanian authorities were saying, we advertised public hearings and no one bothered to come. And then the communicant was saying, but what they wrote in the notice, first it was that it was in the wrong newspaper, but second, what they wrote in the notice. They wrote that the project is about solving waste management problem in Vilnius city, this is the capital. But the case was related to building a waste management plant in a city, small village, Kazokiski, which is 40 kilometers from Vilnius. And the communicant was saying, okay, if the public knew that solving waste management in Vilnius would be by building nearby a huge landfill, we would have come. But who bothers about waste management in Vilnius? So therefore, it was not adequate public notice. Okay, I'm just... maybe a word about access to information, Article 6.6. All the relevant documentation should be made available to the public at the time of public participation. And then one of the most acute problems in most countries is problems with the EIA documentation that is subject to copyrights. And therefore, in many countries, the public is denied access to the full EIA documentation. And we addressed this in the Romanian case. And we clearly said that this is not an abuse of copyright if the public has access to full EIA documentation. There is a debate whether at all its EIA documentation is subject to copyright, but even if it is, the public should have access to entire EIA documentation. Okay, I understand I need to finish. I haven't finished. I'm sorry for this. Thank you very much.